Hi there, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the P-Pro Podcast. P-Pro helps millions across the world pay and get paid for goods online. And P-Pro is a part of the larger fintech industry. And this industry is constantly in flux, and at times can seem quite opaque. In each episode, I sit down with some of the expert voices from within P-Pro to explore and hopefully illuminate an area of the fintech industry. This week, we're sitting down with Ralph Olhausen. Ralph represents P-Pro at the European API Evaluation Group, which, if you're not familiar with, don't worry. We'll be diving into that, as well as how PSD2 will be affecting open banking and the European fintech industry. Now, this episode is a little bit longer than usual, but that's only because Ralph is a fountain of information. He provides us this week with a real insider's view of how regulations are drawn up in Europe. In the show notes, you'll find Ralph's Twitter, as well as some articles that Ralph has written for P-Pro. And now, without further ado, Ralph Olhausen. And Ralph, what exactly do you do at P-Pro?
Hello, I'm at P-Pro. I'm the business development director, so I'm in charge of expanding our business, especially into areas that we're not doing today. Part of that is, of course, related to PSD2, which I think is what we're talking about here also, and our future activities in this area. Related to that, because P-Pro is an e-money institution licensed in the UK, I'm also representing the EMA at the ERPB, the European Retail Payments Board of the ECB, and also now a member of the API Evaluation Group, which is initiated by the EC and the ERPB.
That just sounds like alphabet soup to me, but I'm sure it will make all sense later on. Now, you've already mentioned PSD2, and can you explain what exactly PSD2 is, why it was necessary to have PSD2? What is a change from PSD?
PSD2, well, there's several new elements to it, but the one that everyone is talking about is because it brings under regulation a previously non-regulated activity of payment initiation. So it was specifically targeted to those companies who were doing this independent of the banks, because there are three types of these payment initiation providers that have been in existence so far. So one, those which are actually owned by the banks or banking groups such as Ideal, for example, and also those which are integrated with the banks, not owned, but integrated with the banks. Good examples would be whatever, My Bank or P24. And then there is those which are working independently of the banks as third-party payment providers, and good examples for those would be Sofort or Trustly or P-Pro's instant transfer service.
And these groups were in the first PSD not included, or just the technology wasn't there yet, or why are they integrated now into the PSD2?
Well, it was a non-regulated activity, and in particular, what has been the concern was those which are working independent of the banks, essentially using an overlay technology where they take the username and password of the individual and log in on their behalf and initiate a payment as if they were the user. Now, that has been for many years. Something that especially the banks didn't like, and was felt to be not secure enough. Hence, PSD2 was born, or that part that starts regulating this activity to make sure that there is no security risk coming from those type of services. So that's why there have been some changes to the system to make sure that that works well.
Okay, and who will PSD2 benefit the most?
Well, at the end of the day, I think it'll benefit mostly in the end user. I always comparing it with like 20 years ago, I was in telecom. So I worked through that liberalization of telecoms in Europe, which is changed enormously the situation in that regard. So for with internet services, etc. So you would have the incumbents. Up to 20 years ago, you would only have basically monopolies of the incumbents, and now you have a vast range of value-added services around telecoms that you could not have had otherwise. And similar situation here, so it's not exactly the same because banks are not really a monopoly, but they are monopolies monopolizing the data that you have with them, and actually it's actually your data, so you should be allowed to use this data elsewhere. And so value-added service providers such as payment initiation services that make a payment directly from your bank account on your behalf without you needing a credit card or any other instrument. So you just have your bank account and that's it. You don't need more.
And so a lot of the benefits from PSD2 are actually, it's from the API, right?
It's from the bank account. So you have a lot of data in your bank account that that is at the moment buried there, and you can only access it through the relatively small range of services that your bank offers. And payment initiation is usually not one of them. So unless you're in some exceptional situation, like for example in Holland, where most banks offer this, Germany maybe is not bad either, but in most other countries you can't do. If you shop online, you're not given the option to pay from your bank account. You need to have a card, you need to have a wallet, you need to have some other instrument that is actually unnecessary. And so giving you access to your bank account to a third-party provider to automate that is, I think, a very valuable service. And so is, by the way, what's called account information services, because you may have more than one account and you may want to have a consolidated view on that. So you may want to have an app on the phone which just looks a bit better than whatever the website of your bank. And so these account information service providers do exactly that. They collect the data, your bank data, from different banks, different accounts, and they give you one view. They also allow some automation between. So you, for example, at the end of the month, you can sweep your whatever remaining money from the checking account into the savings account automatically. There's many value-added services that can be provided this way.
So PSD2 essentially opens up banking in Europe. You're actively lobbying on behalf of PSPs at the European level, at these council meetings. Yeah. Is there any discussion looking at other countries that have had open banking, like the UK or Finland or India last year? And how are you learning from their experiences and integrating in here?
No, actually, we have had it probably first around here in Europe. And we've had it now for about 15 years. So within those 15 years, there have been billions of transactions that have been done by these service providers, so far unregulated, but there haven't been any major issues either. So it's just that, because in particular the banks didn't like it too much, so they wanted this to be regulated. And yes, in theory, there could be security issues, which are now addressed to make sure that these services continue without problem into the future. So it was about changing, or let's say amending these, complementing, I think is the better way to put it, these services by, for example, a one-time password. Because one of the criticism here was that for these overlay services, bank-independent services, you would share your username and password, the static password. And so therefore, PSD2 is now making it mandatory to have a second factor, like a one-time password, which is unique to the transaction, so that even if that shared static password would get lost, I couldn't take the money from your account, because you always need that second factor. So that was one of the main reasons to get that second factor. The reason why now these third-party providers are obliged to identify themselves at the bank is because the banks were complaining that they didn't know whether it's now the end user or whether this the PIS, the payment initiation service provider, was accessing the account. So now they have to officially identify themselves at the bank, say, okay, here I am, I'm TPP service such, and now I'm going to access this user's account, so you know. And and thirdly, to make sure that these companies are supervised, and that means initially to get the license, so they will be audited, their systems, their platforms, their security systems will be audited to make sure that it is strong enough for providing such services, and they will be under ongoing supervision on a yearly audits and ongoing supervision to make sure that it stays that way, and that what they're not accessing any data they shouldn't, that they are not storing any data they shouldn't, they're not dealing with sensitive information such as credentials in a way they shouldn't, and that's all why they are now being regulated.
You mentioned earlier that the banks were maybe not as eager to embrace API. How has it been at the European level? Has it been like pulling teeth with the banks? Or I read in some article from ACI and Ovum that 90% of banks are developing APIs. But why is there this little bit of a struggle?
Well, it started the other way around, because all these companies, the non-bank integrated ones, by definition, not being integrated with the bank, meaning they had to use the only interface there is, which is the user interface. So the online banking user interface has been used to access this data in the past. And this has been done by, well, logging in on behalf of the customer, using their credentials, and then what is called screen scraping, meaning an automated browsing. So instead of the user manually going through the screens and retrieving the information they want, or filling in a bank transfer form with the beneficiary IBAN details and the whatever reference code, etc., and initiating the payment. So if you want to do all that on behalf of them, you do screen scraping, which is essentially automating the browsing. And that is the activity or technology that the banks never liked. Although I think it's actually, because screen scraping as such is just a technology, it's widely used around the world, every search engine does it, it's every day, everywhere. Without screen scraping, the internet couldn't work, actually. But the banks didn't like that part where these TPPs would then have access to everything in the account, so they really thought that they should only have access to the data needed for whatever service they want to provide. And therefore, instead of letting them screen scrape the whole account and letting them go into the front door of the user interface, they would rather provide a backdoor interface where they can better control which data is being released. And that backdoor interface is now what we call an API. So it was the banks who were pushing for the API, but it's very much in the interest of a TPP too, because screen scraping is a difficult thing, because you are relying on the screens, which may change, so you may have to adapt and adjust the scrapers all the time. So it's much easier to use a structured API interface than doing screen scraping. So there is good reasons why TPPs would actually want these APIs, and that is also the case, if they do, and if they provide the data needed. The big concern, of course, is that from a bank's perspective, I can't see good reasons why banks want APIs, because why would they want to do all this additional investment if the user interface is already there, working well and maintained with a lot of money? But I can see many doubtful reasons banks may have, and that is exactly narrowing down the access to make sure that they can trip feed the TPPs with the data they want, rather than having the TPP pull what they need. And don't forget, whatever the TPP does has to be authorized and consented to by the end user, so they can't access any data which they're not supposed to do, and that's also why they're being regulated now.
And the API Evaluation Group is a collection of which different groups and the e-commerce market.
Yeah, so after the PSD2 was done and enacted 2 years ago, now being transposed into national laws, and the so-called RTS about strong customer authentication and secure communication. So the RTS is a complementary piece of legislation that details many things that are not detailed enough in the PSD2. So this has been done and heavily discussed over the last year or two, and where I was involved as well, to make sure that this supplementary or second level legislation below PSD2 is done in a way which is balanced between the interests of banks and fintechs. And now that has been agreed as well end of last year, and will come into effect 18 months later, which is in September 19. But now all of that has been done and is more or less written in stone. Now there's still open question, there's still different interpretations of various aspects, and that is why the European Commission created this market group, the API Evaluation Group, where the market participants are invited to look at the various API initiatives which are now underway, trying to provide some standard in this API business, and whether and how they're doing, whether they are doing what the TPPs need or not. And it also relates to one provision in this RTS whereby banks would normally, if their API doesn't work well, the TPP could fall back to the user interface, so that they just they're not going out of business because the API doesn't work. They can then use the user interface, which is more likely to work. And so that's what's called a fallback. Because of the banks were pushing so hard, they were granted some provision in this RTS that they can be exempted from providing this fallback if their API has been used widely and without problem for 3 months. And so that's why now here's the interest of, well, this market group, the API Evaluation Group, shall look at what is required for these APIs so that they can be widely used the TPPs, and therefore the national competent authority in that country could grant such a bank an exemption from providing that fallback.
And so who exactly are the market group? You mentioned PSPs. You mentioned
In there we have three representatives of TPPs, so third-party providers. We have three representatives of the banks, actually one each for each of the banking group. There is the EBF, the private banks. There is the cooperative banks, and there is the saving banks, each with one rep. On the TPP side, we have some of the main fintechs and TPPs represented there. So there is Sofort / Klarna. This is a part of Klarna is there. There is also from a PI's perspective, me for PPro, and there is also for the AIS perspective, someone from banking. It's a French AIS, and there's also we actually have two co-chairs, one from the TPP side, that would be Oscar from Trustly, and there's one from the bank side, James Whittle from UK Open Banking, and then there is the merchants, the offline merchants, the online merchants, and the user. BIC is the European consumer organization. So the customers are represented. And then there is also the European money institutions and also the European payment institutions with a representative. And apart from that, then there are observers by the ECB, by the EC, and in particular also by the EBA, because it's the EBA, the European Bank Regulator, which is advising the national regulators on how they should then look at these APIs and which ones should be, say, cleared or which ones could be used for then granting an exemption from that fallback I mentioned.
And how many people is this exactly in total?
Oh, that's a good question. 20 or so? So 15. So usually we're around 15 in there.
And are you guys?
And by the way, there are expert groups. So this is just the membership of this evaluation group. We did create, because we're looking at the main five API initiatives, which is the Berlin Group, the Open Banking UK, the STET in France, the Polish API, and the Slovakian API. So those are the biggest five API standardization initiatives underway. And so we created one expert group each with about 5-6 members each. So there is a much larger group of experts looking at these APIs in detail.
So there are competing APIs in the different countries that will then, or am I understanding this right? So there are different APIs in the different countries that was a standard. So England has faster payments or FSS?
Yeah, well, yes, but in England they have a really a bit of a different situation because they created what they call open banking separately from PSD2.
Right.
We're now at a problem there, or looking at the situation how to make these two compatible, but they're in theory two different initiatives.
One, right, this is my question. So how did the different regional APIs merge
together? Well, so in the UK they created this open banking and the API that goes with it, and now they have a roadmap on making that PSD2 compatible. Some of the other countries have done that within the remit of PSD2, such as in France or in Poland. They thought that they wanted to have a one API for those countries, which is why they created these national API initiatives. Then there is Berlin Group, which is a cross-regional activity that was created many years ago for banks to cooperate and create some standards around the use of cards, credit cards. And this is how the Berlin Group, their first meeting was in Berlin. That's why they're called Berlin Group. It's not a German group. So it's an international European group of banks which have worked together for many, many years in standardization activity. And so that's why they've now asked this group to look at a PSD2 API standard as well. And and then there's some other countries, as I mentioned Slovakia, which is in there. But there's more. There is also, I think, the Czech Republic is doing their own API. So there's more to come. And there are other also private initiatives around the APIs. And maybe we shouldn't forget that providing an API is only one of two possibilities, because the banks have the choice of whether they want to provide an API or whether they want to just let the TPPs continue accessing the user interface and screen scrape that.
And which do you think is the better option? Should the banks embrace API or should they let the...
Well, as I mentioned, from a TPP's perspective, although many always say that they love screen scraping, they can do what they want, you can't do what you want because you always need the consent of your customer. And now in the future, you're also heavily regulated. So you can't do... You're very limited in what you can do, which is and rightly so. But if from a TPP's perspective, an API is much better because it's much more efficient, it's much more structured, and it's much easier to handle. But there is a big if. If only it provides the data needed, and that is the big question. Because I think going back to one of your earlier questions about what is a blueprint for this in other countries, I think the Europeans were leading on this, and maybe in particular in Germany, where we had with the Ford probably the first service doing payment initiation independent from banks. So that has been in existence for 10, 15 years, and it worked very well. In some other countries, that didn't really exist or didn't work. For example, in the UK, because not many banks had a second factor, so it was actually too insecure to do it there. So what we now have to look at is that these APIs are really providing a bigger and better basis for services rather than narrowing it down. Because in the UK, where you had nothing, so whatever you provide in this API now is more than there was before, because before there was nothing. If you had the same API in Germany, you would have it would be narrowing down a lot what has been available in the past. And if that is all we would get, we would have much less service post PSD2 than we had before, which is, of course, not really what was intended.
And how exactly will this change the payment landscape? So you mentioned with telecoms 20 years ago or 30 years ago, when it was deregulated, it completely changed the landscape in Europe. Is there going to be a similar effect with PSD2 for banks and payment service providers as well?
I think so. But at the moment, we have some imagination on what you can do with these services. And it's already has been proven useful over the last 10 years. There is payment initiation, there is account information services, there is lending services, where rather than going to some... whatever, a difficult process of getting a loan by providing a lot of data, you can just provide access to your bank account, and then the provider just checks on your whatever 90-day statement and to basically check how creditworthy you are, and then you're given the loan there and then right away, more or less in real time, and all you have to do is letting them have a look at your bank account without providing anything else, just as an example. And there will be, I think, a myriad of services that we haven't even thought about. Because if you now look back 20 years, what has happened around telecoms or in this telecommunication space, most of the services we have today, you could not have thought about 20 years ago. And here is a similar situation. We have some imagination of what can be done and what will be available if you can use your bank data. But there will be so much more that we haven't even thought about that will change banking and the use of money here in Europe and probably elsewhere in the world, because we're not the only one going in this direction.
And do you think banks have an opportunity to lead this innovation, or do you think they're going to be left behind by some of these new upstarts?
I think banks have very much the opportunity to be in the lead. They even have a very big advantage over the fintechs now, because many of those services will be easier to be handled by themselves. So I think there will be many more banks providing account information services than fintechs, because all those banks and some started with what they call multi-banking apps, where in their bank app you can add in accounts that you have at other banks. And so it's exactly what an account information service provider provides. Many banks have now started providing already. And they already have you as a customer, and you may already have their app, it's much easier for them to expand on that than any new fintech persuading you to download theirs and starting from scratch with them. So banks have a great opportunity here. And it's not just about account information, it's also about payment initiation, of course, and all the other services which may be invented. I just think that they're probably a bit slower on the invention side. So that's why I think there will always be, I think from a bank's perspective, you should be interested to attract these third-party providers also to complement what you have. And you shouldn't just try to build everything yourself. It's a bit like the apps the app shops of like Apple or Google, where they're providing the basis and for creating an ecosystem to attracting developers, fintechs, others who come up with very creative solutions, apps, and new services that they couldn't have all done themselves. So the leading banks and the ones looking forward, they are trying to create an ecosystem. They're not trying to provide all these things themselves, but they are trying to provide a great API, attract a lot of TPPs to it, and then these TPPs providing all sorts of thousands and tens of thousands of services. That's what the leading banks will be planning to do. Looking forward, but then there is many others who are at the opposite end of the scale, some who are looking at it completely defensively and they just want to provide the absolute minimum possible and they will just try to be difficult. So, and what we, from a TPP's perspective, we want to access all of them. And so some banks will make it easy, some banks will make it very difficult. And so we have to make sure and influence the regulation in the right way to make sure that it's those banks who are trying to be difficult are not allowed to do so.
And one of the benefits of open banking is instant transfer, right? So you have the instant transfer of funds between bank accounts.
Well, the instant, what's called now instant transfer or instant payments in Europe in particular, it's a variation of the SEPA credit transfer. It's called SEPA credit transfer instant or SCT inst. That is a new payment method, if you like. It's very similar to a bank transfer, to a SEPA credit transfer, a bank transfer, only that it happens not with a delay of 1 day. It happens with a delay of 10 seconds. So that is great, but it's only started last November, and a few hundreds, and I think a bit more than 1,000 banks now signed on to it. But there are over 5,000 in Europe, so there is a bit to go still. It's a bit like the fax machines, you know. It only works if both ends are using it. So you have to be, for this transfer to be instant, the sending bank and the receiving bank have to be connected to this and allowing it. And if that happens, if and when that is there, then it'll be even more interesting, because all these payment initiated will not just be then happen overnight somehow, so it will be happen instantly. Which, by the way, takes away one of the big headaches of a payment initiation. In particular, which is the difference between initiation and execution. So how do you make sure that the payment is actually executed? Because all you can do is initiate it. And some banks, not being real-time, they do that overnight, and a lot can happen between you shopping and lunchtime, and then the transfer to be executed overnight, it may fail. And so there is something required to be handled. And with an instant payment, that will go away, because it'll just be instant. But in the e-commerce space, I doubt that instant payments will play a big role anytime soon, because, as I said, it'll take time before most of the banks are on it. Then it'll take time before there is no premium charge for it. And if you're in e-commerce, you know, the end user doesn't want to pay for the transfer to have the card payments, PayPal, all the other payment methods are free to the end user. So this has to be free to the end user too. I don't think that, and also the merchant, what's really required is a payment guarantee to the merchant. The merchant needs to know right there and then that the payment was done, so that they can release the goods and the person can download his music right away and doesn't have to wait for the next day. Or if it is a delivery, that it's been sent off right away and not only the next day or 2 days later. So what's important there is that the merchant gets a payment guarantee. He doesn't need to have the money right there and then in his account. It's enough to give him a message that he can rely on. That last point, giving that real-time message, is something that is still being discussed. It was one of the first things that have been brought up 5 years ago when PSD2 was first envisaged, that in order to initiate a payment, you have to make sure that it gets executed. And in the absence of a contract, in the absence of an integration with the bank, in the absence of a guarantee by the bank, you have to mitigate that risk of the payment not being executed, and therefore you need some data, and that's what you look at the account. So is there an overdraft? Are there standing orders on the day? Are there direct debits coming in usually on that day? Does the customer have a habit of sweeping his account after shopping online to create the failure themselves, or by accident? I don't know, if your wife takes money out of the ATM machine in the afternoon and suddenly you don't have enough money in the account. That's why you need some data for payment initiation. And that's still being disputed right up to today. So it's that's something that is still not really settled. And the other big area that has been disputed and probably still is the question of what's called redirection. because this whole thing, PSD2, was done for to secure this, what I call the overlay, so the bank independent services and the credential sharing that they rely on. And now, after all of this, and after having all this supervision and bringing all of this in, the banks now still say that, well, hang on, well, you can't really, you shouldn't do the credential sharing. The customer should be redirected to the bank's website and log in there, so to have the credentials there. And yes, of course, there is advantage to that, but it creates a user experience redirecting from one to the other, which creates some phishing perception and others. So the user experience is bad or not good enough. Well, the rest of the world is moving from one click to zero click invisible payments. We can't move from one click to 10 click payments. So that has to be avoided. And that's why this thorny issue of redirection and credential sharing is still being discussed. And I hope that common sense will prevail and that the TPPs will be allowed to continue what they've been done up to today. Now, additionally secured with all those new measures and licensing and supervision, etc., essentially providing a much easier, much better user experience based on that credential sharing.
And so where do you find the middle ground between banks and TTPs, where you have these completely separate ideas of how transactions should go forth? How do these two separate groups actually find this compromise and middle ground?
Yeah, well, I think it's hard, and the way to succeed there is to not take the bank view or the TPP view, but to take the view of the customer view. So what is it that the customer really wants? And they want some choice. And now at the moment, the API evaluation group is at a point where we are advising the API standard initiatives on what their standard should support. We're not yet at a stage to then tell the banks on what part of that they have to implement. So therefore, here with the first document that we actually did published from this API evaluation group was exactly about the authentication methods between redirect and what's called embedded, and then our decoupled versions of that. So we've released a document advising the API initiatives that they should support all those four methods and not just one of them. And it was possible to agree this with the banks, because from a bank's perspective, they also want these API initiatives to provide all the functionality. However, the more difficult discussion will then be had following on when it comes to the question of which one of those, how many of those, the banks should be implemented, because that's where we didn't really diverge. So the banks would say, okay, well, fine, the API should be large, and then so we have some banks who want to offer this all, but we also have other banks who want to offer the minimum. And so we'll have a very hard discussions about what the minimum shall be and whether a bank should get away to only provide a redirection, because then I would argue that wouldn't even need a PSD2 license at all. So there is at the moment, we are at a stage where it's still easier to agree, but this will get more difficult over the coming month.
You mentioned also that there's consumer advocates somewhere in the group as well. Mm-hmm. How are they participating in the conversation?
Well, from a consumer's perspective, or the consumer representative there is taking very much the viewpoint of a very defensive view, really trying to protect the consumer from being, well, talked into or led into or tricked into using services they don't want to. And I think that's quite unfortunate, because yes, of course, that you have to make sure that that's the case, that but we have a lot of law in place. That's why, one of the reasons why we bring these companies under regulation, so that they're supervised, not doing so that I have to justify what they're doing, that not only they have to get the user consent, they have to prove that they have it. And with GDPR coming in, you know, the whole thing adds up to that as well. So there is already a lot of protection for the consumer. What PSD2 is about is to, and GDPR as well, by the way, is not just about the protection, is allowing the customers, those who want to use value-added services, those who want to share that data in return for getting value-added services that they want. So the opportunity side of that is not, unfortunately, not very much represented there.
How do third-party providers like PPRO stand to benefit from PSD2?
Well, arguably, we're today already the largest provider for real-time bank transfers in Europe, because all the services that exist and have been in existence up to now, we have connected to our platform. So we have all the bank-owned ones, Ideal, ChiroPay, EPS, all of them. We have the bank-integrated ones like MyBank or P24 or PayU or Finnish Banking, Baltic Banking, etc. It's all we all have it, and also the bank-independent ones such as Sofort and Trustly or Instant Transfer. So we have them all. They cover today probably about half the banks in Europe, 2,500 or so. What PSD2 allows us is now to cover the other half of the banks in Europe and their customers to use, to pay online with just their bank account.
And is PSD2 of any benefit to merchants at all? Or is it strictly mostly for the financial sector?
No. It's, of course, for the merchants. So these merchants are our customers. They have today, they can reach about half of the consumers in Europe via these services. For the other half, still needs wallets or cards or other vehicles or payment instruments, as it's called, in addition to their bank account. So it allows them then to basically cover everyone in Europe having a bank account to pay from that without anything else, without knowing anything else, without having any other account, without knowing any other username, password, without any card, without anything. So just the bank account is enough. And right there and then you're on a new merchant's website, you see checkout, pay with PSD2 or whatever it's called, and you click on that, you select your country, you select your bank, and then you pay, you use your existing bank credentials. You don't, as I mentioned, you don't need additional separate ones, and you make your payment without sign up, without registration, without anything in addition. All you need is your bank account that you have already. At the end of the day, we are here to, and PSD2 was done, to provide bigger and better value-added services around banking. And now we have to make sure that the move from using the user interface and screen scraping towards APIs, and as a fintech being obliged to use that, that it can really lead to that. So it's the banks to prove that their APIs are really enabling more than what has been possible in the past, and not less, which is one of my biggest concerns.
So there's been some dispute between banks and TTPs about how best to go about authenticating purchases. Have there been any other conflicts within the group about other issues that will be important going forth?
Yeah, well, an important one is not on the account information side, because one of the big question marks around PSD2 and account information is that PSD2 is concerned with payments and payment accounts. Now, there is some different understanding and interpretation of what a payment account is in various countries, so that it will not be the same, because this PSD2 being transposed into national law, meaning that there are differences by country. And so, for example, in some countries, a savings account is a payments account because you can do a payment from it. In some others, it does not count as a payment account. Similar for credit cards, and but then there are many accounts which everyone agrees they're not payment accounts, such as mortgage, etc. The problem from an account information service provider's perspective is that only 20% of the data that they deal with and they consolidate in the app that you use to have a view of all your accounts, only 20% of that is coming from payments accounts. Therefore, where do they get the other 80% from in the future when the API the banks are implementing is only accessing payments accounts? So they will have to continue doing screen scraping for the other accounts. And so then there are question marks about, why should you? Because for the same bank, now me as an AIS provider, I would have to use a dedicated account. I would have integrated, I have work integrating with their backdoor for the payments, and I still have to use their front door user interface for the other accounts. So it's a double effort and no value really from an AIS perspective. So that has to be solved. We're trying to persuade the API initiatives to provide data also for non-payment accounts, but many of them say, why should we? Well, PSD2 is payments only, and we have no intention to do more than that. So there are still big questions there.
The account information service providers will have limited access to other accounts that people might have.
Well, they will have to continue using screen scraping for that. And
the whole point of PDS2 was to get rid of screen scraping. So
well, it actually wasn't. At the outset, that wasn't the idea. The idea of bringing in APIs, those were the banks pushing for it. And as I said, from a TBP perspective, yeah, it's great. It's probably more efficient. I just doubt that the banks have genuine reasons for wanting it, because I can see many not so genuine reasons, such as trying to control, to limit, to to narrow things down, to make less competition possible, etc. So that's why I'm so adamant that the banks are now have to prove that now that they are granted the right to force everyone through the API, that they are not abusing it, this to limit the user to just a bit of the data. Because the idea, of course, is that all the data that you have in your bank account you can use for getting value-added services. Yeah, so it's about making sure that we're really opening banking also in those countries where it actually has been open for the last decade already and being used, and that we are not narrowing it down there.
The APIs that exist in other countries already, have the banks also done this, where they limited the amount of data that other providers can have?
There are not really these APIs. This is a new thing, and as much as some people may think that screen scraping is a dangerous activity, it's actually not at all. It's done all the time around the world. Has been for many years. It's a very tried and tested technology, and so are the user interfaces of all the banks. They have been around for decades, and they are tested. They have high availability. The banks make a big effort that their user interface is stable, always up and running, and always there. So the combination of these two tried and tested technologies is actually ideal. And now we're only moving this to some new API interface and the backdoor, which is not there, which is only being developed yet, which no doubt will have bugs, which no doubt will have holes in it, which no doubt can be tricked and hacked in like other systems, especially if they're new. So I'm not a big believer that we're adding much security by forcing this. This is the banks basically getting their will and trying to have a better control and a handle, and essentially being the gateway at the end there and controlling what is being let out and not. And so from my mind, this is actually contradicting the original purpose of PSD2.
And PSD2 goes into effect when?
Well, it has been in January 13 this year. It was already enacted 2 years before, so the countries had 2 years to implement international law, which, well, it was done in many European countries. Some of them are still sort of on it, so they are now delayed since January. Some countries are delayed. But the real thing, or the real change, will happen when this RTS goes live, which is end of September 2019, because the banks from January 18, they have 18 months to implement. Actually, from when the RTS was signed off, I think in March, they have 18 months from there, which leads to September 19, to implement these APIs and the technology for TPPs to identify themselves. In the meantime, we basically have more or less continue what we've had in the past.
And when will we actually start seeing effects for the on the consumer side for PSD2?
I think we're starting it now, because more banks, everyone has, in particular banks, have started to provide these multi-banking apps, and they're using this technology. I think there is a lot of buzz in the market about using what is there today. And so here for us as PPRO, we are supplying a lot of these services today. Now, many of the new players will need to get licensed, so they cannot yet start, so they have to obtain the license first. And then in order to use the APIs, the banks will only make them available in the course of next year. So I think that towards the middle of next year, we'll see more and more of this coming. But it's not a big bang overnight, because it'll take time to integrate all these APIs. And even if you go for an initiative, the banks implement it in a different way. So it's not just one integration you have to do. There's a lot of technical work to be done and licenses to obtain. And in order to get the license, a lot of auditing, security. You know, this is quite a big thing, a big effort for those fintechs who want to go after it.
When you're looking at like India, which has also had an open banking system integrated recently, you saw this proliferation of new e-wallets and e-commerce tools that consumers can use to pay for goods online. Is there going to be such a similar effect in Europe, where all of a sudden everyone's cashless, or?
Yes and no. I think the difference, or one main difference, is that in India it's very much top down, one solution, that one size has to fit all. So it's everyone has to follow one given standard, and which is good in terms of harmonization. And I think some are advocating this in Europe because the open banking in Europe is also much more prescriptive than PSD2. And many were hoping for just one API rather than five standards and whatever 500 implementations of it. There is of course an advantage in having just one API, and there's a lot of pressure here in Europe to driving everyone towards unifying into one. But there is also advantage of having different ones, because you then that's where you can compete, that's where, you know, things can evolve you have a better chance of also spreading your bets a bit and not having all eggs in one basket, especially if it gets hacked one day. And so I think there's more room for competition in Europe than there is for India at a more infrastructure level as well, at the value-added services level.
How do the APIs actually differ? So as I was understanding it, the APIs essentially allow the TTPs or other providers to access the information from the banks. Do the APIs vary in the way they do so, or why are there these five different ways of doing the same thing?
Well, they just started independently of each other. Now, there is a good overlap between them, and some are talking about merging and getting together and just making it easier. And the ERPB, I mentioned at the beginning, is also trying to drive everyone towards a more common standard. So there is a lot of, let's say, political pressure towards making this more coherent and unifying those standards. But, as I said, I think there is also advantages in not having a single standard there and have a few, at least, different ones that can compete with each other. That leaves room for competition, leaves room also for aggregation of these, and pros and cons for those more central, more or less central approach.
Well, Ralph, thank you very much for joining me today. You can follow Ralph at
Ralph Olhausen. Just gotta make the spelling right.
All right, we'll also put in the show notes as well. Thanks very much for listening. And a reminder that you can follow PPRO on Twitter and Instagram at PPRO_group. Until next time.